Okay, great. So let's start off. Will you introduce yourself and then just say like what pronouns you prefer?
Sure. I'm trying to think of how to introduce my name, which is weird. So my preferred name is Josie Herrera. My birth name is Laura Herrera. I prefer they/them pronouns, and I'm running for Mizzou's homecoming king as part of the homecoming royalty court.
Okay, great. And then I guess we can just go straight into like, how would you describe your gender identity and maybe what terminology would you use to describe it?
Sure, yeah. So I identify as genderqueer, which is fairly what we it's not a category you see often represented in the media, so not a lot of people know about what it means to be genderqueer or know that it exists. Usually under the transgender umbrella, we call it the trans umbrella. There's a lot of different things like being a trans man, which is someone who's biologically female who transitions to a man, or vice versa, but usually you don't hear about the things in between, like genderqueer. Genderqueer is also a bit of an umbrella term. It can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But for me, it means I don't feel like I fully identify as a cisgender woman or a trans man. I feel like I can encompass both. But me identifying solely as a woman just doesn't fit quite right with me. So that's a little bit of what being trans, not transgender, but being genderqueer means to me.
Then I guess the next logical question would be like, when did you first come out with this identity, or how did you come to realize that this is where you fell?
Yeah, I used to identify pretty strongly as a cisgender woman, and often people don't know what cisgender means. It means that you identify with your biological sex, like, because gender identity is more about like what, like, is more like the mentality of what you feel you are, versus what is biological. But I think I say that I kind of went through like a gender identity crisis this past January. It kind of started, and it was really strange and very, very confusing. A lot of, I've always had issues with body image, but they became like new issues with body image, like things like concerning my chest and not really like being even more aware and self-conscious like about my hips and things that I felt wouldn't allow me to express my gender as I wanted to. So that's kind of how it started, and I really kept it. It was really confusing, and I kind of kept it quiet for a really long time. I had a partner at the time, and I didn't really discuss it with them until maybe April or May, which is very unusual because we shared everything, and she was very open to that, and so that was kind of surprising. But I talked about it with very limited people, like maybe mostly one of my closer friends. Who identifies as trans. And that kind of like started a process. I started binding my chest towards probably for the first time was in May, maybe even like very late May, and started continuing to do that throughout the summer and still continued to do that. But that was just like a lot of the process. And over the summer, I took an internship in Boston and I went there and I worked for the whole summer. And I really liked it because it gave me a lot of like freedom to just like, I didn't have a lot of pressure when it came to like, what is my gender identity? I can kind of take it slow. I can try out new things. I can try out new ways of expressing myself and feel really comfortable because, I mean, for the most part, no one knew who I was. I was in a new city that I'd never lived in before. I was making new friends who, if I introduced myself as Josie, wouldn't think twice because, to me, to them, that I was never Laura to begin with. And so that was very freeing. And then coming back here, I'm still going through the coming out process, and it's very fitting that this is like coming out week and coming out and like coming out day, coming out month, all that stuff, just because, it was a very slow process. I never did like anything official. I mean, you could consider homecoming kind of like the official coming out process for me as genderqueer. But But yeah, so it's still new to a lot of people, and a lot of like my close friends too. They just started noticing that I started calling myself Laura a lot more and asked me about it, and I was okay to talk to them. But it was actually almost easier to just kind of like come out to people I didn't even know or had just met, because I could just introduce myself as Josie and like no one would think twice. And I didn't always have to explain what all those things meant. But, you know, with other friends and acquaintances I already had, they'd be like, oh, well, very, very understandably, like, oh, like, well, why the name change? And stuff like that.
Okay. And then, so, obviously you joined a sorority before you went through this, your gender identity crisis, as you called it.
Yeah.
So, I guess when you joined, you were identifying as a woman.
Yeah.
Completely just a woman. Mm-hmm. And then now that you've come out sort of as genderqueer, how has that been in a sorority? Has it been like an accepting audience, I guess?
It's been extremely interesting. I always really liked being in a sorority and wanted to join a sorority because I felt like it would be a really comfortable way to me expressing like more femininity. And it still is. Like, it's a space that I can feel like I present myself more masculinely most of the time, but that doesn't mean that when in Boston I didn't go out just by myself and hang out and like wear a dress or wear boots or something like that. Like, it's a very comfortable space for me to explore that as well, which is important when you feel like you encompass both. And now that this is a public process, there's a lot of pressure for me to kind of like be one specific thing. And that's just not the case. But as far as I know, it was very confusing because I didn't, and I apologize to my chapter president for this. I didn't really give the chapter a heads up about what was going on. And I just kind of like went for it. And I said, okay, if I even make it to top 10, then, you know, like I really didn't think I would make it to top 10. So it was like, well, there's no point in saying anything before I even know, which in retrospect is probably not the right choice. But once I actually made it to top 10 and became like a very clear reality that I was going to be going through this process, my chapter president kind of reached out to me and was like, hey, I would really like to talk about like how you identify and what that means. A lot of people are asking a lot of questions and I just don't really know how to answer them, which is kind of the feedback I got back from my sorority, from other organizations I'm in, from friends, from everyone, that no one was really sure. And I'm like, that makes sense because it's not like information that I just share on the regular with a lot of people. So yeah, we actually had kind of a sit-down conversation this past Monday. I sat down first with the Panhellenic Association president and Tri Sigma's Panhellenic delegate and kind of mapped out what that meant. And I was very lucky because our Panhellenic delegate is for the most part very well versed on queer issues of the LGBTQ community, and the Panhellenic president has also at least been like exposed to those things, and like they just had questions, and the purpose was for us to sit down, I could explain what was going on, so then they could explain it to all the delegates, and those delegates could take it back to their chapters so they could understand what was going on. And that went really well. Like, they were really respectful. I drew them diagrams. I literally drew them a trans umbrella and, you know, all those things. And it was really helpful for all of us to kind of go through the steps so they can know and feel comfortable explaining it to other people. Some of my friends who are trans were like, well, is that necessary? Like, why do they need to know that? And I was like, no, I think that makes sense. Like, I'm a part of their community. They're only trying to be supportive. And, you know, if they don't know, they can't be supportive. And right after I had that conversation, I sat down with Tri Sigma's chapter president, who is not someone who I think has gone through like safe space training types of things, but isn't super knowledgeable. So like we did a little bit more basic, and but, you know, by the end of it, like, she was getting it. And while I couldn't be at the chapter meeting, they met and they kind of had like a 15, from what I know, a 15 minute conversation about what it meant. And yeah, and I got really, really great responses from a lot of the sisters who I'm already really close to and who support me. And it's really been just like amazing, amazing support system to know that they're behind me. And I think at one point I was really anxious about it. I just had to ask our chapter president. This might sound silly, but like, I just want to know that you guys don't hate me for whatever reason. So that conversation went well, and I know it's something that I'm getting support from. And I even heard from one of my sisters that she saw a tweet from one of our national Tri-Sigma officers, like, in support of what was happening. And that was really exciting. I think our organization is very on a national and on our local level, very, very accepting. And I'm, like, really grateful to be a part of an organization like that. I wouldn't be able to be in an organization that wasn't like that. So it's been a really great positive experience for me so far, and very, very empowering.
So you kind of said that one advisor tweeted about it, but have you had any sort of, do you know anything about rules on the national level for your sorority as far as like any sort of genderqueer people being in the sorority? Or
no idea.
Okay.
I'm not sure that's something that's ever really been addressed really within much of Greek life overall, even. I am still a member on a local and a national level. I don't really know if there's specific protocol for it. And I'm sure a good amount of it has to do with the fact that it's not like I'm transitioning to an entirely new gender, if that makes sense. Like, there are parts of me that still identify as a woman. Or, you know, components of that. So I don't, like, there's no issues of, like, my membership, which is awesome because I've, you know, I'm on my fourth year and I've put a lot of, like, time and love and faith into the organization. So I'm happy to know that I'm easily still part of it. And that was, you know, never in question.
Yeah. So obviously homecoming court and sorority fraternity life are set up in a gender binary. So how have you kind of been navigating that? Because obviously you chose like a different gender for each one. So,
right. Yeah, definitely.
How does that affect decisions, I guess?
Yeah. And I'll ask you to elaborate more on what you're looking for me to answer. But so far, it's really strange because I really rather not pick a, you know, one or the other because I personally think that the binary is a little bit silly. And we were joking about it in the LGBTQ center. It's like pizza rolls, not gender rolls, and stuff like that. But, you know, I don't think it's really a necessary thing to have. However, it's either pick one or not be able to go through the process at all. And I really wanted to go through this process. I wanted to be able to represent myself. And I also really wanted to be able to represent different communities that don't always get represented, like the queer community, like the trans community, like genderqueer as an identity at all, or even like, you know, I'm a person of color, I'm first generation American, both my parents are from Colombia, I didn't know English until I went into preschool, and you know, I want to be able to represent those communities and show that like anyone can do things on this campus, anyone has access to those things. And even if you're scared to do it, at least ask, because I was scared to do it. And I thought like, well, if they say no, that's their problem. I should at least be able to ask if I can. And it, perfect, perfect process. Like it was almost too easy. So I forgot the original question.
Oh, I was just asking how you navigated the binaries.
Yeah.
That definitely answers it. Because
yeah.
I was talking to one of my friends about it, and I was saying, like, I think that you are probably the first trans person on homecoming royalty mm-hmm. for a university. I found some examples in high schools, which
yeah,
is cool.
Yeah, there's a lot in high schools.
Yeah, but then recently. University level, I feel like it doesn't happen. And I was thinking it's kind of weird that Mid-Missouri's school mm-hmm. is the one to do that. But then I also was thinking, well, probably more liberal colleges don't even set that up that way. Like, yeah, there wouldn't not. Be.
Or they might not even have homecoming.
Yeah, exactly. So homecoming at its base is kind of, there's like a gender separation and definitely. It's more traditional. So I think that may be why mm-hmm. we're being the first year, yeah. as far as I can tell. That's, yeah. who knows? I don't know. I'd have to search every yeah, single university, but.
I haven't been able to find anything, and that's usually something I feel like would be easily publicized, I guess.
Yeah, I would think so.
Learning, going through this process myself. It's yeah. definitely something that's caught interest. But yeah, and you know, it's not, you know, I'm not excited about the fact that I have to pick a side, king or queen, that I feel more comfortable in one than the other, because I am a huge feminist. I, you know, strongly identified as a woman for a long time. And a lot of, you know, my sponsoring organizations, the Women's Center, I used to work there. I've done vagina monologues and all those things. But I would definitely feel more comfortable in the king category. I am the shortest one, but I don't stick out like a sore thumb, like, essentially. I think, yeah, I think it's been an interesting process for that. And a lot of people, I feel like through this process, especially because they don't know how I didn't know how I identified to begin with, kind of like fit me in the trans category. Like, I'm definitely under the trans umbrella, but I don't know if I specifically identify as, oh, I am transgender. However, like, even like close friends of mine, when asked other people and were trying to explain it, like, would explain it like completely wrong. And I thought, you know, I wasn't mad at those people. I thought it was kind of funny to like hear the theories, and friends were like, well, they're explaining to other people, well, they're transitioning to male, which is wrong on two accounts, because one, I'm not transitioning to be a man.
That would include drugs, right? That would be...
Well, not necessarily, but like male is also biological. So that yeah. would include like medical procedures and things like that. And that's pertaining to sex and not gender. Yeah. So I was like, okay, that's like the first part. I'll kind of tell you that like that part's a little wrong. And I'm like, I'm also not transitioning to be a man at all, like even in just identifying. So there's a lot of like things I found like, said that were kind of amusing. I'm like, oh, well, you know, we'll talk about this. Yeah. You know, I'll set the record straight at some point.
Could you explain the difference between sex and gender?
Yeah, really definitely. Quickly? Okay. Sex is biological. So essentially, you're born, and whatever genitalia you have is the sex that the doctor assigns you. And it's not just female and male, which are terms for sex, but it's also include intersex, which is when someone has either like ambiguous genitalia or characteristics of both female and male sexes. So that's biological, strictly. And then man and woman are gender identities. And that's really like, that's what you feel you are. That's a part of the mentality and how you identify. And you can have any type of genitalia, but still identify as any type of gender identity, and that is your gender and your gender presentation and things like that. Did that kind of make sense?
Yeah, that's okay, perfect. Cool. I think that's can be a new concept for people.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so I think. Oh, and then before we start talking about like homecoming in general, sure. I just wanted to know: do you think that Mizzou is a safer, accepting campus for LGBTQ community members?
Yeah, that's definitely a hard one to answer, because, and I feel like I've talked about this with other people, there are definitely two different sides to it. There's the side where we have a really strong, active social justice community. Even in the last 4 years of me being here, I've seen faculty and staff and student leaders who aren't in social justice become so much more accepting and knowledgeable, and at least having that willingness to learn. And you can see it in Greek life with the fact that more people are coming out, and, you know, we're working to have, we have a Greek allies group, we had one, and then we brought it back even. And, you're seeing that more and more, that more visibility. But you know, it's hard for me to ever say that like, oh, this whole campus or this whole town is a safe space. You know, I lived in Greektown for 2 years, and while I didn't have any like incidences or like physical incidences happen, I don't feel safe walking alone at 2 a.m. from Ellis back to like my chapter house in Greektown, especially as someone who can either be, you know, it's kind of funny because when you're a female and you dress masculinely, like people can either one kind of, what's the word? Can hate you for a lot of different reasons. either one, just as a woman in general, as a queer woman, as a seemingly queer woman, or as a queer man, if they mistake you for, if you're dressed very masculinely and, you know, you're just mistaken for a queer guy who might be a little bit effeminate, like, that's a whole other reason too. So, you know, pick one. So like, you know, and walking, I live in downtown now off campus, and walking around downtown on days that people are out partying, I am very, very aware of my surroundings. And just like very aware of like trying to avoid, you know, large groups of people who are very intoxicated, and, you know, kind of noticing where I am and trying to like get home a little bit faster than I usually would if it was just the daytime. So I can't, you know, I can't say that I feel safe all the time, but I'm very lucky that I've never had anything happen. You know, street harassment happens, catcalling happens, that kind of stuff. But, you know, I've never been attacked. I've never felt extremely threatened. And I think part of, especially during the day, mostly like on campus, it is a really big safe space, you know. Doesn't mean I don't get weird looks, or like when I'm out in the community, don't get kind of like the rubberneckers who like to gawk at you. But I, you know, I feel safe for the most part. And it is very surprising that it's in Missouri. and a lot of my friends that I've made from out of state are extremely surprised that we have a campus culture that is so accepting and like ready to learn and ready to make change happen at different times.
Okay, great. So now I just want to get into the homecoming stuff. So how did you first decide to apply for royalty?
Yeah, my junior year, I kind of watched some of my friends go through the process and like really admired them for doing that. And, you know, there is one of my closest friends was a candidate who definitely kind of debunked the stereotype of being very Mizzou raw and stuff like that. And it was just really exciting to be representing a different community. And, you know, I thought like, oh, like, I think I would actually really like to do this. You know, I don't consider myself, you know, the biggest Mizzou raw person. I don't know all the trivia. I'm not on tour team or summer welcome or anything like that. But I thought like, you know, I think I can make a difference going through this process as an out queer person. I've been out just as a queer human for a very long time. And I'm like, I think I can make a difference here. And I think I would enjoy going through the process and being that representation. So I kind of decided then. And then as it got closer to senior year, I think sometime last semester, my former partner and I were talking about it, and she brought up the question, actually. I didn't even think about it at all. She asked, well, do you think you'd run for king? And I was like, I didn't even think that could be an option. Maybe that would be kind of cool. That would be great. Like, I think I'd be more comfortable there. And we kind of talked about it amongst ourselves. I brought it up with a friend on the steering committee who brought it up with their advisor, who basically, Allie, friend at the Alumni Center, basically gave me the thumbs up saying, hey, you know, we don't care what category you run for as long as you feel more comfortable and as long as people are applying. Like, it was basically like, oh, just put in an application. So I did. And I wouldn't have been able to do it if it wasn't for having so much support from friends who had been on royalty before, or, you know, mentors at the university, as well as just like friends like in the queer community that I threw the idea out of. If they hadn't been so supportive, I don't think I'd be able, would have been able to go through the process.
Yeah. And then were you nominated through the Women's Center? Is that you're representing the Women's Center, right?
So yeah.
Was there some sort of voting process with that? I know with sororities they kind of pick like 5 people and have them apply.
Right.
But.
Yeah. No, not so much. It was mostly I kind of like left it. I talked about it a little bit with the past coordinator, and she was extremely excited and like helped talk with me about everything homecoming related, and they had sponsored a top 10 candidate last year, so they knew a little bit about how it goes. And then I actually kind of like forgot to mention it for a while, and it was 2 days before I had to put in my paper application. I'm like, whoops, I guess I should go like officially ask. And I just went. Laura Hackard, who, you know, coordinates the Women's Center, and we call her the matriarch, she's absolutely wonderful. I just kind of went and talked to her and asked, like, hey, I'm thinking about running for homecoming, and I'm thinking about running for homecoming king. Will the Women's Center sponsor me? And she was just on board. They weren't sponsoring anyone else. No one had asked so far. And so they were all over it. And I said, okay, I'll put your name on the application. And that was, it was very easy in that respect.
Okay. Let's see. So you decided to apply for King candidate because you just had talked about it with your partner, or you felt you would be most comfortable as a King candidate. Do you want to just talk about that or explain it?
Sure, yeah. Definitely. I did debate a lot as to whether to run under the Queen category or the King category. Again, it's hard for me to, like, have to pick one because it something about it just seems strange. But, you know, I kind of debated, talked about it with people, you know, we kind of felt like there would be a lot more active opposition to me running under the King category, which I haven't really experienced so far. And it might be more acceptable for me to run under Queen, but I kind of had to pick of like, all right, which one do I want to represent myself under, or which one will I be happier to represent under? And that's kind of how I came to like the final decision of like, this is what I'm going to do. And I also had to think of, like, a contingency plan. If they said, absolutely not, you cannot run for king, would I still want to run for queen or not run at all? And that was something I had to think about that I luckily did not have to make a choice between. That was a little bit about how that went. It was just, like, a lot of talking to people who I feel like could give me, like, good advice. And also kind of, like, weighing, like, all right, what kind of impact do I want to take, or like what kind of risks are associated with each option?
Yeah. So what were some of the things that you talked about during the interview process or the selection process? Did you discuss your gender at all?
I actually didn't. One of the things that a friend told me was that I should be prepared when I went into the interview that they might ask about for me to explain my gender identity. He basically stated, he was like, they would be bold enough to ask. and I, you know, that's kind of what I was expecting, but it never came up. Like, I brought it up myself. I made it very clear that the reason I was running for homecoming was because I wanted to represent communities that weren't represented. And I talked about those communities. I kind of like tried to make silly jokes about like, yeah, it's not every day you get like a Josie under the King category, and stuff like that, because I didn't want it to be like a scary thing for people to talk about. But no, no one ever confronted me or upright asked like, well, what are you, or can you explain this to us? People just kind of went with it, which was surprising, but also really, really great. I felt like it showed just kind of like an acceptance of like, all right, this is what's happening, and we're going to run with it.
I kind of wonder, since homecoming is one of our biggest alumni events, do you think that there were conversations that were had at a higher level than that about whether or not they should go forward with this?
I have no idea. I have no doubts that there could have been. I wouldn't be surprised if there were at all. And I feel like I would expect for those conversations to have happened. I have no idea if they did happen or what they sounded like or what they were. But all I know is, like, in the end, if they really had a problem with it, you know, I wouldn't have made it to top 30 or I wouldn't have made it to top 10. You know, I'm very fortunate that whatever those, if there were those conversations, that they were probably positive, because basically the Alumni Center is trusting me to be a positive representation for our campus and for our student body and for, you know, just our university on whatever level that is. And that's a lot of really special trust to be given, especially as someone who sticks out like a sore thumb in a lot of situations for a lot of different reasons.
So what do you think it means for the university that they kind of made this step?
Right. I think it means that, like, I think people are just a lot more willing to have conversations and become educated. They know it's not, hopefully know that it's not an issue that can really be ignored or swept under the rug or anything like that, and that it's okay to have those conversations. I think it's really fitting that we are the first homecoming, and now we get to be the first homecoming that does this. I think that's really cool, and to me that's really special. That feels really special. That I get to make this happen, because our homecoming has always made history. And yeah, just like in the size, being the first and all that. And now we get to, you know, I guess represent equality on a very different level.
Yeah. Okay. Like, have you had any negative feedback at all from just anybody?
Barely. As far as organizations I'm a part of, I know people in the leadership of those organizations have made it clear that if a member has a problem and wants to vocalize it, that, like, they're welcome to leave, which is really just amazing, because, like, having conversation and debating is one thing, and that's totally okay. But, like, ill will is, you know, to have anyone who might have a negative opinion for no reason without understanding an issue, and for that to kind of be shut down is really special. So I heard some things along those lines. So I have a lot of support. I haven't heard a lot of negative things from people at all, actually. I had one friend who doesn't go to the university anymore, but they were telling me that when the listing came up, they were looking through all the comments on the page, looking for trolls, essentially, you know, like internet trolls that are, you know, just want to start a fight and want to say offensive things. And she was like, I couldn't find any trolls. And I thought that was just really, really, one, really surprising for the internet to not have people who are going to be vocal. Cause I've seen posts go up about, you know, different cultural and diversity events on our campus that have become really controversial and have had a lot of people say a lot of really terrible and ignorant things on the internet, on Facebook or Twitter and things like that. And I was really surprised that this was not a situation where that was happening. So I haven't been faced with a lot of things. I have no doubts that, you know, I'm kind of prepared for those. I know they can happen. And I've read things in other contexts that are really similar, of people saying really ignorant things, very violent things and stuff like that, and I'm kind of prepared for those. I know they can happen. They might happen closer to homecoming as more people kind of like find out what's going on, and especially as, like, you know, I don't know how older alumni might react, or even younger alumni, depending on their views. I don't know how they're going to react once they get here and get to campus. But people have made it very, very clear that they are supportive, and the university has made it very clear that they're supportive and excited, and just excited to see what happens. And I'm just excited to be on court at all. Like, my goal was to make it to top 30, and I've surpassed that already. I've already won. Like, that was it. I've done everything I needed to do, even, so.
Okay, great. And then you kind of talked about how you do see yourself as a representative of communities that aren't really seen in mm-hmm. contexts like this very often. So can you maybe just go a little deeper into that? Like, you said which communities you're representing, but, like, how do you hope that will positively impact those communities?
Yeah, definitely. You know, homecoming is just one event. You know, it's a huge event on our campus, and it happens once a year. But it is just like one thing. However, it's really representative of the rest of our campus and campus culture and who is involved in those things and who isn't. And while we have a really strong, like, community that's based around cultural identities and social justice, those communities don't often, you know, get involved with what is considered the big things on our campus, like, you know, larger organizations like Summer Welcome or Tour Team or Tap Day or Homecoming. That involvement isn't always there. There's a different type of involvement. So what I've seen a lot of is a lot of my friends congratulating me, a lot of acquaintances that I work with congratulating me, and then asking, oh, do I get to vote? And, you know, they're juniors and seniors, and they've never voted in homecoming. They didn't even know they could vote at all. Or grad students. Can grad students vote? I'm like, any student on our campus can vote. Actually, everyone receives an email link with the telling them how to vote. And people don't even know that's an option because they have never been invested in the process before. Whether it's because they just didn't know people going through it, or the people that were going through it weren't a part of their circle or the social justice community. So that there's like pockets of this campus that have never been mobilized to like even participate in homecoming. One of my friends, I think this morning, she was actually a grad assistant. And when I first met her as a grad assistant in one of my classes. She posted an article that came out about me and was like, I've never cared about homecoming until this. You know, she's never been involved with that at all. So there's a lot of people like that on our campus that just haven't had the opportunity or really like the need or want to get involved with these big entities. So I feel like this could be something that I hope encourages other people to apply and really like broaden what it means to be at the university and to be a Mizzou Tiger. Doesn't mean you have to be one thing. It doesn't mean you have to be involved in the same things as everyone else who's a student leader. You can do your own thing. You can be really happy and really successful. And at the same time, get to be your own person.
I just wanted to know, like, how can people at Mizzou be an ally to you during homecoming and then also just after in their daily lives?
Yeah. I have seen so much allyship in this whole process. It's actually been pretty overwhelming. Like, I can't open my Facebook with any, like, and check it every 15 minutes without someone else messaging me just to say congratulations. Sometimes they're a close friend, sometimes they're a mentor, and sometimes I, like, don't even know who they are. And they've graduated and now they're alum living somewhere else. So people have been amazing allies. And it's almost weird. I was never the cool kid ever. I was never the cool kid. And now like I walk around and people stop me and I don't know who they are, but apparently they know who I am. And I'm like, my friends are always joking around now, being like, oh, Josie's so popular and like blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I am still like this big nerd that reads Harry Potter and only wants to like do like nerdy journalistic things. And, you know, that's not me. Like if people knew me in high school, I could barely socialize ever. You know, my friends here wouldn't have recognized me. And I'm sure people who knew me in high school wouldn't recognize me now at all. So it's kind of really funny. But as far as like being an ally, in the homecoming process, everyone's really excited. And what some people don't see is that I'm still going through the process of coming out to my family. And this is extremely public and not something that I think I thought through enough at all.
Yeah.
So like through that struggle, I feel like it's good to have the friends I do, because if I want to tell them about it, they're very understanding and, you know, they're there for me when I need them. And all the support I've gotten so far has like made everything completely worth it. And I think after Homecoming. I don't know. I think just even through the community, I guess one of the biggest things is if you want to know about someone's identity, you should ask them. A lot of my friends are like, people keep on asking me questions and I don't know how to answer them. And can I refer them to you? I'm like, yeah, please. Like, I'm the only one who's going to be able to give the right answer to begin with. And be patient enough to explain all those things to people. And I think that that really applies to anyone. If you don't know how someone identifies, if you don't know their pronouns, if, you know, you don't know what their gender identity is, then that's something you bring up to them, like, and not anyone else. They can refuse to answer you, and that's in their right. But you should ask, and just ask respectfully. You know, you don't be the person who's like, well, what are you? Be the person who asks, hey, like, can you tell me a little bit about your gender identity? And what pronouns do you prefer? That's really helpful. Sometimes I talk to people, like, people will, quote-unquote, like, misgender me. And then when they realize that they've used the wrong name or the wrong pronoun or even in public, they'll be like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry, and start apologizing profusely. And I'm like, whoa, like, it's okay. Like, I appreciate that you understand that you said the wrong thing and that you're apologizing, but it doesn't have to be as, like, over-exaggerated. It's, I'm going to be okay. Like, you know, just stop and say, oh, I'm sorry. Correct yourself and, like, move on with the conversation. That's a huge thing, too, because sometimes it just makes it more uncomfortable, at least for me, more uncomfortable when people are like, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm being so terrible. I'm like, no, you're not. Like, just correct yourself and move on. Like, we're gonna be fine. Let's just keep on having our conversation. But yeah.
So don't make a big deal out of it and ask questions if you have them would be the sum that up. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. Do you anticipate during homecoming events having people, just strangers, wanting to have those conversations with you?
Yeah, I didn't anticipate that. I've definitely gotten, a few emails and Facebook messages of whether there are other leaders on campus that I haven't worked with, or just, some of my newer sorority sisters who don't know me as well, who are just curious and they want to know more, and they ask if I could explain it to them, and I'm happy to explain it to them. I just ask, all right, how like 101 do we need to get? where do you want me to start? Essentially. So yeah, I'm definitely seeing that of people asking more questions. I forgot the question really fast. Can you repeat it?
Wait, now I don't remember. No, okay. Oh, I was just saying, do you think people will want to, strangers will want to talk to you about it?
Yeah. And so, yeah, there definitely have been strangers to Facebook message me or email me and be like, I just want to know more and, like, what I'm supposed to do and how to do it and how to be a better ally. And definitely happy to work with those people and kind of like break it down for them, draw them more diagrams. That's what my life is right now. I'm still drawing a lot of diagrams. So I think so. And I think that's really great that they're also reaching out. And it's hard to reach out and ask questions sometimes, even, you know, I mean, of course, it's, nothing is as hard as, like, living with that identity and worrying about it. But it can also be really hard to ask questions and ask them properly because you don't want to seem like the idiot who doesn't know or says something wrong or accidentally offends someone. But it's, you know, it's also brave to ask the questions and find that education for yourself.
Okay. Is there anything that you think we missed that's important to this overarching explainer of what's going on, I guess?
Yeah, definitely. Oh, my God. I don't know. Let me think.
Take your time.
I think and this is just something I've had on my mind, so I guess, like, this is, like, a good opportunity to talk about it. I think it's, like, all the support that I've gotten is really, really kind and sweet. And I've gotten it from so many people that I respect. I remember thinking about this the other day, but, like, people are always being like, oh, you're brave and blah, blah, blah. I don't really think I'm that brave. Like, if people weren't already expressed their support for me before this happened through the process, like my friends saying that they were excited and they thought this was a good idea, I probably wouldn't be doing it. Because it's scary. And you know, I am going through a very overwhelming anxiety process because of it, even with all the positive feedback. It's making me extremely anxious. But I think I really want credit to be given to, like, all the people who even made this possible. And, like, I'm essentially standing on the shoulders of giants. Like, that's the saying. You know, if it wasn't for the fact that people started an MU Women's Center and an LGBTQ Center, Multicultural Center, all those centers, you know, I wouldn't have even had a platform to start this if it wasn't for my sorority sisters already respecting my identity and respecting me as a person. I wouldn't be able to do this and be open with my sorority about it. If it wasn't for some of my mentors being really open and giving me advice, you know, all those things, there are so many people that, like, I owe this process to, that I think it's really unfair for everyone to be saying that, like, oh, you're brave and this is really inspirational and all those things, because, like, this is just a buildup of what other people have already created long before I was even on this campus. You know, the programs, starting Safe Space, building those centers, educating faculty and staff in outside of the social justice realm, starting organizations like Greek Allies and the Triangle Coalition. The people who, I mean, the university wouldn't even support a Triangle Coalition until the Supreme Court told us to. Oh my God, like, do I owe so much to the people who fought that all the way to the Supreme Court, like, to even have that on our campus? Like, all those things and all those things that intersect, like, this is, I understand why this is a big deal. And I'm really excited that, like, I get to help take a next step. But the only reason I'm able to do it and do it in such a positive way is because so many people have worked so hard before I was even born to, like, come to lead up to this moment. So it feels weird, but I'm like, I do not get all or even close to all of the credit for this, you know? I've been inspired by a truly amazing group of people from a lot of different parts of the world and the country and from a lot of different walks of life. And, like, they get as much credit as I do, I think. So that's one of the things that seems sappy, but has also been kind of frustrating to me. Because I'm like, the only reason I could do this is because you guys were great role models. Like, the only reason. So I think that, to me, that's kind of important to get out there.
Okay, great. And then also, are there any resources that people can go to? Obviously, this is not a campus radio station. This is a real radio station. So are there, I guess, general websites that you would recommend for people listening from further away? Like, there are people in Kirksville who could potentially hear this. So
yeah,
they can't come to campus and go to the LGBTQ
of
center.
Course.
So
I'm trying to think. So I would say Missouri specific.
Yeah.
Resources, definitely. The Center Project is Mid-Missouri's only LGBTQ center that is not affiliated with a university. It's for the whole Mid-Missouri area. Center Project is a great resource. There's other organizations that focus on legislation, like PROMO. They focus on LGBTQ issues and, you know, in the legislature. I said that wrong. LGBTQ legislation. The Mid-Missouri Crisis Line is an amazing, amazing resource that I really love to talk about as being really important. I have called crisis lines before, and I always feel like that's important to share with people, that, like, it's okay to, like, reach out when you need stuff. And they are trained in LGBTQ issues. They also have a line for the deaf community. They also have a text line that I found out about not that long ago, that people could even text, you know, questions to, and if they're not comfortable or not in a position to call, that's a great resource to use in Missouri. I think those are like the three Missouri resources I can think of, and there's lots of national things too, like GLSEN is one, the Trevor Project is another. Trying to think of other ones, and a lot of, yeah, those are easily Googleable things to search for as well.